of interview, April 27, 1974. Place of interview, Hilltop Convalescent Home. Full name of interviewee, Mrs. Isabel Powers. Full address of interviewee, room 123, Hilltop Convalescent Home, Bakersfield, California. Hyde Street. Yeah.
I'm Isabel Powers, living in the Hilltop Convalescent Home. And I came to California in 1917 from Colorado and came to Petaluma. And we had a friend who was going to high school in Petaluma from the South Fork, from the Fern Valley. And she invited me up to come up and spend the summer on their ranch, the Smith Ranch. And that's how I first came to the South Fork Valley. There at the Smith Ranch, I met Marvin Powers, Patty Smith's cousin, and became good friends and later become engaged, and we were married in 1919. And in about the same year, about 1920, we bought a small ranch. And there, my husband Marvin bought a few head of cattle and started a herd and run his cattle on the desert, on an open range. He farmed on this little ranch, and we had four children. Our first one died at birth, and we raised our three sons there. I have many happy memories on that little ranch. We had very little entertainment. There was a little church down the road between Onyx and Weldon. We called it the little church by the side of the road. And there we attended church every Sunday, and my children went to Sunday school. And they had the other entertainment, the Woman's Club, which has been there for a number of years, gave a dance once a month, and that was about the extent of any entertainment. My husband and I felt that home and bed was the place for little ones, so after our children were big, when their children were babies, we stayed at home and put our children to bed. We didn't take them out, and we knew it was impossible to get babysitters in those days. As I was saying, Marvin and I had a very happy life. I have many wonderful memories, and we enjoyed being at home and our work, and enjoyed being together. And all the other young people would go to the dances, once or twice, and took our oldest son. He was just a baby. And there was a cloakroom in this dancing hall, and they had a shelf with an edge around it, a wide shelf for people, I guess, for hats or anything like that, and then a lot of hooks around the room for the coats and wraps. But people would come in a hurry, anxious to get the dancing, and they would throw their cloaks on that shelf, not bother to hang them up. And there were some people who put their babies to bed on this shelf. And we'd go in there sometimes, and they would be just covered and almost smothered with coats and wraps. And we said, we'd never do that. We just want to stay home and put our babies to bed. We wouldn't take a chance. So we didn't take in very many dances, few before our children came. My husband was a wonderful dancer, but I didn't dance. But never did get to dancing very well. But he was full of rhythm and fun. Oh, that man was just full of humor and happiness. I'll never forget him. As I was telling you, in the early morning, he'd get up to daylight. Was he a worker? He was working. We bought an old ranch. That part of the home was tumbled down. Fences for leaning and falling, laying on the ground. A old picket fence in front for at least a half a mile. It was down and halfway down and up and all the way along the road. And Marvin went to work cutting down old dead trees. And we had two orchards and many, many trees were dead. Grubbing out trees and taking down fences and putting up new fences, and went to work early in the morning. Sometimes he wouldn't even stop for a gate. He always jumped, put his hands on the post and jumped over the fence. He was always on the run and always was singing. And then I'd wake up early hours, just getting light. I'd find a cup of cold coffee sitting on my bed, maybe a fried egg that was curled, fried till it was just curled, and that's the way he loved his eggs. And the cream and the scum floating on a cup of cold coffee. He always seen that I had my coffee, but he wouldn't wake me up. And I'd hear him singing. Oh, those were wonderful memories. And he sang, and this is one, this memories. You see, childhood days, wildhood days. Have you ever heard it?
Uh-huh.
And he would sing that, and then he would sing that song, Sweetheart, Sweetheart. And and he had a lovely tenor voice. But do you think you could ever get him to sing in a choir or in a group? He just wouldn't. He was just too timid about it. And we put up fruit together. He'd help me whenever we canned fruit. We canned 100 quarts at a time. And he would peel the peaches or the fruit, and help me with my washings, and help me with my babies when we were little. He'd always get up at night, and if there's any walking do in the night. He was a wonderful man. None like him. You know, I told you that I first came to the Smith Ranch, Hattie Hamm's home, where her mother and father lived, and her grandfather and grandmother lived. And then later on, their son's wife came there to live, and she's still living there in this home down near Onyx. And they had more farming land down there, so then he moved down there and took up a homestead. And this Thomas Smith, not Thomas Hooper Smith, that was the grandfather. And that home was called the Cottage Grove Home. And that's why the little graveyard above that was called the Cottage Grove. It was on that ranch, as part of the ranch. And there was a little school. The first school that my husband ever went to was right across, almost across from the cemetery, up a little ways. And there's a grove, there's some trees there that where this little schoolhouse used to be. My husband started to school there. And I remember him telling, I always thought it was so cute. The first day he went to school, he had a pair of rubber, red cowboy boots that he planned on wearing to school. Well, Marvin's mother died with her last child, which was the 14th. And he was 4 years old when she died. So his first day of school, he planned on wearing his little rubber, his cowboy boots. And but course, with all those children and no mother, sometimes things got in the scramble, of course. The father was a ranger, and he was gone quite a bit. But there were older sisters, older girls that took over. But he only could find one red boot. And I can almost see him going up that road to school with one red boot on and a shoe and a little lard bucket for a lunch pail. And my husband and four of the four men, four of the ranchers, for years ran cattle, their cattle on a government free range up in Fish Creek country. And there was Jim Robertson and Bill Alexander and Stanley Smith and my husband, and they worked together and ran their cattle, and sometimes would drive their cattle, and it was about maybe 80 miles all the way up, driving from the ranch up to Fish Creek. And they each had their own leased meadow from the government up there. And it just as you went up, came up, Nine Mile Canyon. Why, as you get to the top in the valley, you'll see some little white, look like white cottages dotted around on the hill. And there, a man by the name of Bales, John Bales, I believe his name was, and he had taken his bride up there, and they had lived there all their lives and raised their oldest boy till he was 18 years old, and they had never went to school. It was in Tulare County. And our men, they spoke to the authorities, some of the authorities in Tulare County, and they about them not going to school or anything, and so they got after them, and Mr. Bales was a wonderful carpenter, but very, very strange man. We feel that he had been injured in the war, and his mind wasn't just right, wasn't right at all. And he built a schoolhouse, a yard, and play equipment was just perfect, yard, and put the mother in there when she couldn't even speak plain as a teacher, and they let her go at that. And whenever they'd see anybody coming, the father would say, get in the schoolhouse and start studying. He had a little store, and but he seemed to get more queer as the years went by and do different things that just didn't seem normal. And he was cruel to his family and his girls. And he built a nice-looking home. It just looks awfully nice from the outside. It looked like a nice, sprawling ranch house, and the lovely porches on it and everything. But they say that he wouldn't have a door in the house, and not even the bathroom, because he was afraid. He knew he wasn't doing right lots of times, and he was very underhanded, and was teaching his boys to be deceitful, and so he felt he had to watch everybody, and he was so cruel. And as those girls got in their teenage, and the boy, they just determined they had to get away from him.
Tell about that body.
The body, and at one time, so they, the boys ran away. I mean, two of the girls ran away, and went down to a cow camp, where Stanley Smith had. And he took them down the hill, and they met Mr. Bales coming back. He was looking for them. The boys and the girls got down in the bottom of the car to hide, and they took them to the police station. And they never went back again, never had to go back again. And the authorities looked into it, and the stories the girls and the children would tell, and Johnny, the oldest boy, were just terrible things he did. And they said at one time they seen a body when they got up early in the morning, of a young girl on a cot, and then it disappeared. And there had a girl, a young girl hadn't disappeared up in that part of the country, and she was going to go see them, go see the veil. That was what she had said. And McNally, John McNally was sheriff for the Tulare County, and he got a woman from the police department and two other policemen, and went up there armed to take him, and he didn't have any, wasn't suspicious at all at that time, and he walked out just as friendly, and they all had their guns on him, and they took him in a car and put the wrist cuffs on him and chained him to the bottom of the floor. They were just wasn't taking any chances, and he's right. And this time he's in an institution, and I'm sure will be there the rest of his life. He said he would kill her. Of course, she and the children testified against him. And they were able to sell this land and get the money.
How many children did they have?
They must have had six or seven.
Well, what about that baby?
Oh, their firstborn was died at birth, and it was buried up there without giving anyone notice or calling a coroner or anything, a doctor or coroner. Of course, it's about 90 miles from there to Ridgecrest, I think. And there was a lot of wild times, wild things and exciting things that happened up in that valley. There was the Walker brothers were hard drinkers. They were lived down below Isabella. And I guess their original home was at Keysville. And they were miners, but they were boys, all of them drank very heavy, and then they'd get into their fights, but they never harmed one another. There was one that killed somebody and put in the penitentiary, and no one's ever heard of him anymore. And there was, and I'm not sure, three or four that were went into a mine, and they were drinking, and they killed every one of them. They killed one another till they were all dead. The last one was injured so much that he died. And one brother, before he died, he took another brother that was dead and put him in a wheelbarrow, and dumped him over a bank. When I first went up there, I went on the mail stage. The Canyon Road wasn't built, and we went over Walker's Basin, over Calhanda, through Calhanda, and then down the Bodfish Hill. And when we got our first Ford, we had our first Ford from the time we were married. My husband got interested in getting, he loved to get new cars. He was interested in having a car. He was just 25, but still, he was just like a young kid when it come to a car. And the day we were to marry, he went downtown. He didn't tell me, but he was going to get a new car. And I was sitting on the porch waiting, and we were way late for our wedding. He came up with a new car, a new Ford car with white wire wheels, which was something, the thing those days, topped with the isinglass curtains that you can snap on. And,
who had the first car up there?
Oh, and Hattie Smith. met me at Isabella in the first car that came into the valley. It was the Cadillac. Hattie Hand is the daughter of Tom Smith and his daughter Stanley, and Tandy Smith and Hattie were brother and sister. And she gave birth to 7 children, and they were all on right at home on the ranch. I wouldn't go to a hospital with my first child when I expected my first child. And my mother just begged me to go to the hospital. Said it was safer to go the first time with your to be in a hospital. And I said we just starting and we couldn't afford it. So I lost my baby. And but Hattie gave birth to 7, and not the time the doctor wasn't there. And but she never lost a baby.
What about the picnics on 4th of July?
And then church would have an ice cream social. Of course, I forgot about that. Once a year, and then always on 4th of July, it was always a big day. Ever since I was a child, even back in Colorado, we had our celebration. We look forward to 4th of July with our firecrackers. But in South Fork, we would go up on Greenhorn with our several gallons of ice cream and the watermelons and all the old timers and the youngsters and all of them. Have a wonderful picnic.
Wow. Take any watermelons?
Watermelon, yes, watermelon and ice cream. And Weaver Hand, very young, would tell us. It was against the law to, of course, to sell any kind of liquor or even beer to the Indians. But a party that had the Weldon Post Office, the post office had been there so many, many years, and the Indians would come in and buy all the vanilla that was on the shelves. They couldn't keep vanilla. So we decided to sell beer, get a license and sell beer. I don't know whether he hadn't thought, realized that you can't sell any kind of liquor or a drink, even beer, because you have to be so far from the post office. And the man that was one party decided to start a store up above Onyx. And he saw what this party was doing and thought they weren't doing right. Is that almost true? And he just decided to put in an application for the post office and report him. And he got the post office. Well, this made the other party that was in at the post office very, very angry. And so he made up his mind to get even. And he had quite a few Indians that had made two different places. They had a small rancherie, one on one side of the river and one on the other side of the river, and they were on his land. And he took those Indian cabins and shacks and put them right across from this new store, which is called the
Builder's Emporium?
The Emporium, what is it?
Builder's Emporium?
Builder's Emporium. Mm-hmm. So, but finally, the Indians moved away, and it's all clear. They left their shacks there, though, but I guess sometimes different ones have taken them away because they're disappearing. Really, some interesting things happened in those days. But now, in my old age, I can look back, and only I'm so thankful that I can remember the good things and not. There was hardships, but all the happy times we had together and the closeness. And I'm so grateful for it, my memories.
When you stayed in the summertime up there around Kennedy Meadows, how did you sleep and eat and bathe and everything?
Well, we usually took a wash tub or two with us because we had to wash clothes. I stayed there one summer, all summer, 3 months, up at Fish Creek. And we had to carry water up a real steep hill from a spring and wash our clothes on the washboard. And believe me, they got dirty too. The children playing in that black soil underneath the pine trees. And we had an open, well, I built fireplaces, cook places with rocks and cement, and put tin over the top, and that was the top of the stove, stovepipe sticking up from the back. And even then you got smoke in your eyes all the time you were cooking. And then we did our baking Dutch ovens, and under the ground sometimes, and then we made hot biscuits in the Dutch oven. They build a fire and dig a hole and build a fire in it, a small hole to fit the pot, and get it sizzling hot and some nice coals in this place, and then we'd scoop out the coals and put on the lid and put our shortening in the pot. That's the men did most of that. And they would make their biscuits in the top of the sack. That's when the boys were cooking for themselves on drive. Sometimes they were up there when the snow was falling, bringing the last of their cattle out. And they moved from place to place, coming down, and wake up many morning with their canvas, bed canvases covered with snow and everything wet.
Did you always have fresh meat?
Always. They took turns killing a good fat heifer, the men at the camps, and we would share each time, and then we would hang it out at night, and in the daytime they had a big, heavy, real heavy white muslin sacks. And put it in these muslin sacks, and then wrap it in other canvases, and then they'd bring them, lay it on their bed in their cabin, and they'd bring the rest of the bed and mattress back over it, and the meat would be just ice cold that night. That's the way we kept our meat. And we also made jerky. You know how to make jerky. Cut it in strips and dip it, or roll it in pepper and salt, and then just let it set overnight. Then the next day, hang it on a line or a fence, drape it over strips of this meat, and that would keep the flies and the wasps away, and because of the salt. And why the boys so often carried the jerky in their pockets sometimes when they didn't get home at noon, rolled all day. Before I came down here, I was living what we call the New Kernville. We lived for 30 years over on the South Fork before we sold the ranch. And then we decided we wanted to live in a town where we'd be near the doctors and the market, the little stores, and be closer neighbors, have close neighbors. And my husband said that my husband said that if we wanted to find a place with a fireplace and a pine tree in the yard, and we found it. And it was an old house brought from old Kernville before they put the building.